Saturday, Connie Wellis will be in hosting the program, and I'll be on Sunday, emerging artists and a couple of great guests. So make sure you're part of the program as we continue rolling through November. We'll be back in a moment with the rest of your open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. Wow, 3 weeks from now, it'll be Thanksgiving. Wow, what a fast year this is. We'll have live shows for you, by the way, all through the holidays. So after you're done doing your thing, whatever it is, just turn on your radio and become part of the program, because we'll be live on Thanksgiving, we'll be live on Christmas Eve, we'll be live on Christmas night, we'll be live on New Year's Eve, we'll be live on New Year's Day, and all those programs fall during the week where I'm on, and so we'll be doing them all for you. And had they fallen on weekends, our weekend people would have done those. So you'll always get live 7 days a week from us. Let's go to the phones. Aaron is with us in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Aaron. Good morning.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for holding so long.
Hey, no problem. Last time I talked to you, I was getting ready to have my blind right eye removed. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. How'd everything turn out?
Oh, it's been a real struggle this year, but it's taught me a lot.
That's good.
It's taught me a lot. And real quickly, I just have a quick story and then a quick thing that I like to read, if that's okay, that I wrote.
Yeah, let's go with the story first. Go ahead.
Okay. After I had my eye taken out, I was on my way home. My parents were taking me home from my surgery, and I called my buddy Ray, and he knew what I was going through, and he asked me, he said, "So, well, how'd it go, Aaron?" I said, "I'm on my way home now," and he said, "So you're my hero, Aaron." And people are paying attention when you go through adversity. If you're courageous and go through it with a positive attitude, people are going to admire that. But if you...
Oh, absolutely. Aaron, tell everybody how you lost your eye. What happened to you?
Well, it was a blind eye. I had a rare birth defect in my right eye. And it just got so bad that it affected my left eye. And I also have cerebral palsy, too. So that...
That doesn't help.
I'm an optimist. I always look at the bright side of things.
Well, good for you. Now, do you still have vision in the remaining eye?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, good. Thank God.
I wrote this one night, and it's real quick. It's not very long. But
okay.
I wrote it one night, just kind of thinking about where I'd gone through or whatever. It says, "Dear God, you love me for who I am, no more, no less. Most would say I have problems. Well, I call them gifts. A gift of looking at the world in a different way than most. A gift of empathy, compassion, and love. The battles you allowed me to fight made my spirit stronger. Well, I don't know what tomorrow brings. I hope I taught someone today or brought a smile to someone's face. But most importantly, showing your pure love to others just by being me."
Good for you, Aaron. Good for you. How old are you?
I'm 34.
Well, you still got a great life ahead of you, my friend, especially with the heart you have.
Thank you. It's not easy, but you know, I'm courageous and I'm strong, and I get through it. And I just want to encourage the listeners that, you know, if you're going through a hard time, find something you love. And for me, it's music. I love music. I play a lot of drums and keep my head above water.
Oh, do you really? You know what? If it wasn't too late, because you probably have people in your house, I'd have you play the drums for us over the phone.
Yeah. And my parents are sleeping, so that probably won't be a
do you know some of the well-known drummers? If I mentioned a name, would you know him? Kenny Aronoff?
I don't know him.
Kenny's one of the greatest drummers, Aaron, of all times. And he plays with John Fogerty, Billy Gibbons once in a while. He's amazing. How would you like him to call you one day and just talk about drumming?
Hey, that would be cool.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold. I want you to give Bobo, who's in for Tom tonight, your phone number. And Bobo, get that to Tom with a note about Kenny Aronoff and have Kenny call Aaron, would you? Thanks, Aaron, and thanks for the poem. And I'm putting you on hold, and we'll get your number, and we'll get that taken care of. That would be cool for you. Amazing. We take for granted all the great benefits we have when we have all our faculties, don't we? Austin's with us in New Haven, Connecticut. Welcome to the program. Hi, Austin.
Hi, George. How are you?
Great. Thanks for holding.
No problem. So I've been a listener for some time, and I wanted to tell you about a strange phenomenon that's been happening to me for a long time now. I want to say
okay.
About several years.
What's going on?
I have these instances where I'll dream that something like will happen, you know, involving me, and it does, and it winds up happening a few days or a few weeks later, and I have no recollection of it, of like deja vu or anything with it. Everything's exactly the same, though.
Huh.
And on other occasions, I'll just be, you know, sitting around minding my own business, and I'll get this that same like feeling in my gut that I've done this before, but with no recollection of it ever happening.
Is it a weird feeling? Is it a weird sensation? Or is it something that makes you feel good?
It's kind of off-putting, really.
That's interesting. There's some psychiatrists are beginning to say now that pure deja vu, that ability of thinking, I've been here before, I know what this person's going to say, is from what is called temporal lobe epilepsy. And it's bizarre. I mean, we've all had stages of deja vu, and but doctors are beginning to say now that it's temporal lobe epilepsy. Check it out. One of the symptoms of that is deja vu. It's weird, because if that's the case, well, we got a lot of people running around with temporal lobe epilepsy, I'll tell you that. Next up, we'll go to Jeff in Seattle, Washington. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Hope all is well with you.
Yeah, this is kind of a different kind of a ghost story. I tried to get on a ghost-to-ghost, and we ran out of time. I lost my mother when I was about 11 years old.
Oh, that's not easy. Not easy at all.
She passed away from a very long-term illness. She was originally born in, she was from England, and
this one's not easy for you, is it?
Sorry about that.
That's okay, Jeff. Take your time.
This is kind of a little emotional for me. So about a year after that, I was in a grocery store with my dad. I used to go there with my mom all the time when I was a lot younger.
Yeah.
And so I was with my dad, and then when he was out shopping around, and I happened to noticed this woman who was out the just out of the corner of my eye, and she was just pushing a grocery cart, but she was just going straight ahead, and there was nothing in the cart or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So she was she turned and looked at me, and I just instantly like froze. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, because I was actually looking at my mother.
Ooh. Did your dad see her too?
No, he was off shopping somewhere.
Okay.
But that's what was strange about it. So after I was looking outside, after I looked at her for a little bit, she was just staring at me with this really kind of almost a euphoric smile on her face. And she was wearing this blue and white checkered dress. And she was just strolling along. And then, so I was instantly shocked. So I couldn't figure out what it was. I wanted to run up to her at first. But then I was really scared, so I decided, well, I'm going to go, I need to go tell my dad that I just saw Mom.
Yeah.
So anyway, She went on down this aisle. I was in the main aisle. She went on down this other aisle, and then so I went to go get him. And I stopped in the middle of my stride, and I thought, "Well, Dad's not going to believe me anyway." So I went back, and I went down to look down that aisle, and she was gone. She wasn't there. So
and she should have been there, right? There's no way to just disappear like that,
yeah,
right?
Right, exactly. So the thing is that it was early in the morning. There was nobody, hardly anybody else in the store, but I covered that entire store.
You ran all over the place, didn't you?
I looked all over in the store. I could not find that woman. So
did you ever tell your father?
I did. I did tell him shortly before he passed away, and I don't know if he really believed me then or not, but
so you waited years before you told him?
Yes, I did. I didn't think that I actually had saw her. I thought maybe I was just missed her so much that I imagined it. But here's the thing that the real kicker about this whole thing. Years ago, here's a few years of fast forward way ahead, back in 2007. This happened. She passed away in 1967, so years ago, in 2007, I was curious more about my mother. I didn't know much about her because she was sick all the time, and she was in hospitals most of the time during my life. And so I went. I did some internet searching, and she had a brother and two sisters still living in England. And so I was able to track them, my uncle down through the internet and found out where he, and I sent a letter basically and asked, you know, to see if it was him. And so sure enough, about a couple weeks later, I had given my phone number and my email address. And sure enough, I got a letter back, or I didn't get a letter back. I actually got an email from my aunt, and my aunt had told me I hit the jackpot, and so I did find him. So a year later, we kind of conversed for a while, and my aunt came to visit me. But a year later, I was able to go to England and go visit my relatives, and so we were just. I was visiting one of her sisters, her older sister, or one of her younger sisters, and we were sitting there, and she brought some photos out, and she brought, she pulled out this one photo, and I instantly just, you know, chills went up and down me.
The blue and white checkered dress, right?
Yeah. She had that same smile on her face.
That's amazing.
And so to this day, I always wondered whether I really saw her or not. But now I'm pretty sure that she was just
with that dress. You're convinced, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's a great story, Jeff. Thanks for that. Thanks for sharing that too and opening up to tell us that. Let's go out to Toronto, Canada. Hey, Josh, take it away.
Hello, sir. How's it going?
Okay, thank you.
I was on hold yet again for Ghost to Ghost. Great night. And unfortunately, couldn't get through, but I'm calling today. When I was growing up, my parents, we lived in a bungalow. And one side of the bungalow had a garden hose. Our garden hose was there. And the other side was our driveway. And of course, as a kid, I wouldn't want to go to bed the time that my parents wanted me to go to bed. And as they proceeded to go to bed and sleep and do, of course, that, I would sneak downstairs to the basement and watch TV in our living room very quietly, watch David Letterman and all those late night funny shows.
Yeah.
Anyway, there were many times, many a nights where I heard running from the point of where our garden hose was all the way around the house to the driveway. And that would have been over a couple of months, and that would be at like 1 a.m, 2 a.m, and I'd be, of course, very, very fearful hearing what the heck is running around my house at this time, as one would be. So one day I was brave enough to say, you know what, as this sound passes by the window yet again tonight, I am going to stand up and I am going to open up the drapes just at that right moment to see what this thing is. I did that. There was nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Oh.
And from that point forward, George, I never heard that again. I guess my bravery and I guess showing that I wasn't scared anymore stopped it. And as years went on, I told these stories to my parents, and they would say, you know what? It's funny that you mentioned that, because sometimes my mom would say, I'd be washing the laundry in the basement, and I would hear something like that. Or my dad would say, yeah, I would go to the washroom or whatever the case may be, and I would hear that. And I'm like, wow, we never conversed about that as a family prior to years and years later when we didn't even live in the house anymore. But that was a very freaky story, and I heard it every night, every single night.
Great story, Josh. Thanks for sharing that with us.
By the way,
yeah.
Gerald Celente, is he up for coming by your show for a pop-by visit?
Maybe it's about time we give him a call. He hasn't been on for a while.
The reason why I'm asking is because there's a House bill as of March, House Bill 5404 by Representative Mooney, that wants gold to be backed by, or of course the U.S. dollar, I should say, backed by gold.
Well, we're going to have to get a lot of gold to back up all the money we've got floating around out there.
Actually, they say that if that ever were to happen, if they were to do 20% backed gold dollar, gold per ounce would be $50,000 an ounce.
Wow. Maybe now's the time. Now's the time to buy it, Josh. What do you think? That would be incredible. Next up, let us go to Walter in Pennsylvania. Hey, Walt, welcome to the program.
Ooh, pleasure to talk to you once again, sir.
You too, my friend.
George, if I may, I'd like to say a few words to the George, out in California, you have those liberal elitists like Madonna. You have taxi driver De Niro, Looney, George Clooney, and Barbara Streisand, and et cetera, George. And they're living on these fantastic gated and gun-guarded estates out there, George. And they're criticizing our great President Trump for trying to protect the border. Now, George, How would these liberal elitists vote if Bel Air and Beverly Hills were on that Mexican border, George?
Well, you know how they'd vote.
Exactly, George. George, the people of this country have to wake up. They have to all vote as if their own backyards were on that Mexican border.
Well, and here's the thing, Walt. I mean, because I know you. You've called enough on this program. You care about people. You care about
That's
people.
That's right, George, I do.
And it's heartbreaking to see people who want a better life, but we have to do it in an organized, lawful way. And that's the important thing. You know, if we have room in this country to let 20 million people in legally, I'm all for it. But you can't let 20 million people come in without it being legal.
Exactly, George.
That's the thing, and that's going to be disappointing. Let's find out what happens. Walter, thanks again. You take care of yourself. Let's take a few more calls here on Coast to Coast. Let's go to, we have time? No, we're running out of time. And by the way, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters are coming by to take a quick little break as well. So we'll be back in a moment. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. We've got our own YouTube channel now, and I hope you all subscribe to that. It's free. You simply go to coasttocoastam.com, and right at the top, click the icon for YouTube, and you're there. Or if you're on YouTube, type in Coast to Coast AM Official. That'll get you there. And also sign up for our free Coast Zone newsletter from our website. That's delivered right to your computer 6 days a week. Back in a moment with the Hollywood Ghost Hunters on Coast to Coast AM. Nothing like ghost hunting on a haunted ship, and I had an opportunity to interview two members from the legendary Hollywood Ghost Hunters. Hey, welcome back to the Haunted Queen Mary. I'm George Norrie, and we've got a fascinating hour for you. First of all, let me introduce two folks from the Hollywood Ghost Hunters. You all know Rick McCallum. Rick was with me just several months ago, founder of the group of the Hollywood Ghost Hunters. Rick is not only interested in the paranormal and the unusual, but has had his share of paranormal experience as well. He's been a stuntman, stunt coordinator for more than 25 years.
And Rick started the group along with Kane Hodda, the man who played Jason Voorhees in the classic movie Friday the 13th. Good to see you, Rick, in the flesh now, huh?
Yeah, it's very nice to meet you.
I guess ghost hunters do have flesh.
Well, yeah, and we actually leave a lot of it in a lot of places we go. So
now, the other person you brought with us is R.A. Mihailov, best known as Leatherface in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. Spooky stuff. Currently also co-starring in a new movie, Hatchet 2, as the Hunter Trent. He's appeared in numerous horror movies and TV shows, mostly as the villain. And R.A. brings a unique perspective, hoping to find irrefutable evidence of the paranormal, and I cannot get him to tell me his name.
I never will.
It's R.A.
It's R.A.
Always has been.
Not always, but...
At what point did you become just R.A.?
When I wanted my name on a marquee. I didn't think the whole thing would fit.
And people try to guess. I thought I had it, and I was off, wasn't I?
But it was a nice try.
How did... Rick, let's go back a little bit. When you were telling me back in March about how you formed the Ghost Hunters, what was it that got you to put the group together?
Well, I'd always ghost hunted ever since I was about 25. So it's about 25 years I've been doing it. Kane Hodda and I were in Mansfield Reformatory, which is a very haunted place in Ohio. And it was about 3 in the morning, and he and I were walking back in the cell block, and I saw a shadow man in front of me. And I turned around to tell him, and he was gone. So I thought, oh, great, even the scary Jason guy is going to run away. You know, I'm never going to find a partner. And I turned back around to look, and he's on a full sprint chasing it. Right. So I thought, all right, here's the guy that's got to be my partner. And after we decided to do that, about 2 days later, R.A. came in and worked on the same movie. So we had our first 3 main members after about a week. And then we started getting more people in the Hollywood business, actors, directors, and the like. So that's actually how we got started.
R.A. does not look like a guy who would get scared of a ghost.
Yeah, never. He's not.
I'm not.
Nothing scares you.
The IRS and the business end of a 45.
I mean, how tall are you?
6'5".
He's 6'5". And, you know, go get the movie Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 and look for Leatherface, right?
That's me.
And you'll know what I'm talking about. And I don't think a ghost would try anything around you.
I'm waiting. I am waiting for that experience.
How did you get interested in this?
It's strange. You know, I've sort of always been on the periphery of it. My best friend... as a child, was the son of our town undertaker. And I don't know, you know, they always say the child is the father of the man.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that set a pattern early in my life.
Did you go to funeral homes when you were a kid?
The night the Beatles debuted on Ed Sullivan's show.
I remember. I was just looking at a clip last week. When I was looking for your clip that I just played.
I was in the apartment on top of the funeral parlor for that event.
Man,
yeah.
I used to work in a funeral parlor radio station years ago, and I would work at night. I was doing news, and every once in a while, the conveyor belt where they would lower the body down to the basement when they embalmed the poor guy would go on by itself, and it was the scariest thing I've ever gone through. When you guys go out on investigations, one, you get leads, don't you, Rick?
Yeah, we get them through our website, HollywoodGhostHunters.com. And actually, I research a lot of things, and I'll find buildings, like, in the local area that we can all go to. But a lot of them come through people that come through the website that will tell us that they're having problems that, you know, we'll go over there and see if we can't shag out whatever's in there.
Have you ever been able to stop a ghostly haunting?
Yes, actually, we have... mutual friends. They were R.A.'s friends to begin with. These girls named the Harley Twins.
The Harley Twins?
They go...
That's another story, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're actually two of the youngest, sweetest girls you meet in your life. They actually go to the Harley Davidson things, and they are the models. But they called me up and said, R.A. suggested I come over because this girl had her bedroom haunted. So I went over there, and I was sitting on her bed, and I could see these shadows moving all over the place. It was very active. But it was so sweet because this girl's tiny, and she's got a high voice, and I'm sitting there, and I see a shadow directly in front of her, right next to me, so I'm just sitting there real quietly, and I hear this little voice behind me go, Rick, is there someone right in front of me?
No.
And I went, yeah, there is. I said, don't worry, and she goes, I'm scared. And I said, don't be scared. We'll take care of it. So it was so cute. I told her, I said, look, tell it to leave. She goes, will you please leave? I went, no, tell it to leave. And she goes, well, I really want you to leave. And right then, her door burst open and her twin sister came in and she goes, you leave my sister alone. You get out of here. And I think her sister actually scared whatever was in their way.
Does that work?
Sometimes. Sometimes if you have something a little stronger than that, it takes a little more aggressive behavior. Actually, I had the two girls go out and had a little stronger talk with it. Let's put it that way.
Do you find that there's a difference between a demon that might be haunting or possessing and some little ghost that's hanging around?
Oh, extraordinarily so. I got a little story I want to relate. I have what I think is a demonic entity inside my apartment.
You do?
I do. And matter of fact, the young lady that's sitting right there, I was on the phone with her, and I told her that I had a demon inside my apartment. She goes, aren't you scared? I said, no, I'll tell him to show up and I'll stomp him into the ground. And while I was saying that, she'll even nod and tell you this, a deep growl came through the phone while I was talking. So they can be rather cantankerous if, you know, other than just a ghost that likes to play or something like that. But there are, you know, if you believe in angels, you got to believe in the other half.
All right, R.A., tell me about one of the weirdest experiences in this hunting business that you've been in.
Probably when we went, it's called the Omen House, but I like to call it the Sharon Tate House. And I had the K2, and I was speaking the names of Sharon and all the other victims. Mm-hmm. And I asked them if they were in pain, and the K2 lit up like a Christmas tree. And it was something.
Yeah, that's got to be a sight that must have so much pain, so much horror attached to it.
Yeah.
But you see many of those, especially out here in Hollywood.
There are a lot of them out here. We actually had one that was kind of interesting, was Occidental Studios. When we were filming Hatchet 2, I went up, and I was ghost hunting by myself. And they said that a person had killed themselves up there, and we saw these huge shadows. And it's actually a funny story, because while I was up there, two of the crew came up. They said, you're ghost hunting, we want to go with you. So the one guy started trying to provoke him and swearing and stuff, which I really don't like when people do that.
Right.
But he says, how will I know if there's a ghost? I said, well, if the K2 meter starts going off and it gets all the way up to 5 lights, then you might want to pay attention. So he called it another name, and the thing instantly went up to 5 lights. And he looked at it, and he goes, I'm out of here. And him and the other guy turned around and ran away. So not everybody's meant for ghost hunting, no matter how much they come up and start yelling and screaming.
You know, and there seems to be this new phenomenon of people who want to go on ghost hunting trips. They think it's fun. Maybe it is. But they don't take it seriously.
My suggestion would be that they better start.
Yeah.
Ghosts have a tendency sometimes to follow you home, which a lot of
really?
People. Yeah, it's happened to quite a few people.
And you don't know that until
things start happening at your house. So it's best to take it serious. It's a fun thing to go do. It's very interesting. It's scary. It's an adrenaline rush, but you have to take it seriously, because there are repercussions if you don't. You know, you might have something come home with you.
R.A., we want to talk about ghost hunting with you, obviously, but is it difficult for you to go on these hunting? I mean, you play these incredible parts, and they're horror parts, you know? You know, people running around with chainsaws and doing what they do. How do you adjust back to your regular life like that? I mean, because to be a good actor, and you have fun and you're good at what you do, you get into the character. How long does it take to get out of it? Is it like a light switch?
Yes, it is. It is. I'm kind of like cavalier off camera, off stage. You know, I mean, I'm very loose, and I like to have a good time and everything. You know, I mean, Rick and Kane and I all...
Your buddies?
Yeah, I mean, when we were doing Hatchet 2, we used to hang out in the dressing room. You know, usually we'd come to my dressing room and hang out, and then we'd go out and murder each other.
Yeah.
You know, and it is. It's like a switch. You can just, you know, you can be sitting there drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, and telling jokes, and the minute you step on the stage...
Bang, you flip.
It's all business, you know. And but you can't really lose yourself in a murderous character, because, you know, you're going to end up in prison if you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Have you seen that happen in Hollywood where people have been so immersed with their character that they've carried this into their personal life?
I've seen it in there, yes, but not to a dangerous or violent extent, but yeah.
Maybe to themselves.
Yeah. You know, like drug abuse, drinking, yeah, and things like that. You know, that kind of thing.
How often do you guys go on hunts?
Well, we try and get out of as often as we can, but the problem is that with Kane and R.A., myself, some of our other people, Adam Green, who directed Hatchet, Richard Friedman, we're scattered all over the place because we'll be working on different movies at the same time. So when we do get a chance, we like to go to some of the more famous places, Waverly,
great
sanatorium,
place, yeah,
fantastic place. Charlie and Tina are so nice to us. Sloss Furnaces in Alabama. I mean, we like to hit the big, well-known places and see if they're really up to what people say. And so far, the places we've gone actually are very active and very worth going to, especially Waverly.
What do you think of EVP sounds? What's happening there?
Actually, I think it's someone trying to communicate with us. We were just at a very famous Hollywood location who asked us to come and prove that they were haunted. We went there and we had five or six really good EVPs where they actually said the name of the person. And one of them, we get a very deep no in it. I mean, it's unmistakable. And after we did that and we had great things on camera, the person that owned the building says, well, we can't let you use that because people will think it's haunted.
Right.
I said, you called us here to prove it's haunted. When we just did, what do you want out of us? So, but we get out as often as we can. If anybody has a good location they want us to come to, just go to the website, go to contact us or suggest a hunt, and we'll call you.
HollywoodGhostHunters.com. Do you find that older buildings tend to be more haunted than a newer structure?
I think people think they're more haunted. I have a theory that the world's been here for a long time.
They look more haunted.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. A lot of the appearance, it's just like, in the movies. If you don't have the dark, scary atmosphere, horror movie doesn't fly. But I have a theory that the world's been here for a long time, and right where we're sitting, there's probably been thousands of people die on this land or right around us. So it doesn't have to be a house or someone died in that house. It could be anything that happened right around there. So, but the older houses seem to have that ambiance that will lead you to think that it's more haunted.
R.A., when you go out, do you get more conversations from people about your movie roles or about your ghost hunting roles?
Well, right now, the movie roles are the primary stuff because, we're just starting to build momentum with Hollywood Ghost Hunters.
And it's growing.
Yeah.
Do you get recognized? Always in something.
I'm in a mask.
A mask.
Or, as I like to say affectionately, a rubber head.
Yeah.
People will say, oh, yes, I recognize you, but I think it's just...
What do you wear on Halloween?
What I've got on right now. The people often ask me if I'll go someplace and wear the costume and stuff like that. I'm not really interested.
You like to shut that off when you're done with it,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, yeah. I would rather, if I'm out making an appearance, I'd rather interact with the people than sit there with a mask and drooling.
That's with me. When I go out, if I go out on weekends, if I'm not working, everybody will come up to you and they want to talk about the show and stuff. And, I've done that 5 or 6 days in a row. I want that day of peace and stuff like that. I love it when I'm doing something like these events because these folks are fantastic and you got great interaction. But when you've got your own downtime, like you, and you want to be left alone. And I'm sure you don't want people to talk about that career all the time. You do it 24/7 when you're doing it.
Well, that's one good thing about wearing a mask. You don't. I have the beauty of anonymity.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light,
for Dan Galante, Bobo Johnson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.